order. Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Eugene Connors is excused. Councilmember Joan Hansen?
Here.
Councilmember Shirley Doughty?
Present.
Mayor Ron Ertley?
Here.
Councilmember Anna Klein? Councilmember Doug Dunn?
Here.
Councilmember Serena Sullivan?
Here.
IISB Committee, Mr. Stanley Stern?
Present.
Fred Miller?
Excused.
Okay. Carrie Gustafson?
She's probably due.
Okay. Peter Goldlust?
Here.
Elias Joen?
Present.
Kathy Souden?
Here.
Scott Reese?
Excused.
Thank you. City staff, Justin Johnson, city manager, Ashley Coronado, city clerk, Sharon Bono, finance director, Ann Carl, city attorney.
Thank you very much. Item number one, presentation on the senior care facility feasibility study prepared by BP Diversified. Mr. Johnson.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. I'd like to welcome Mr. Ben Poses, principal of BP Diversified. And last night we had an opportunity to hear a very similar presentation that we're going to hear tonight with the hospital board. I'd like to recognize Mr. John Charlie and thank him for coming, and also the members of the IBISB committee. This is quite an extensive project that was undertaken, and I'm very, very excited to have you all hear what's in store and the results and the findings presented. And with that said, I'd like to turn it over to Councilmember Dunn. I believe we'd like to share a few words.
Let me just make one quick comment, Councilmember. Normally in work sessions, the public normally doesn't participate. However, because this involves lands that we all own in this community, I'm going to allow comments after the council and the IBISB committee comment and ask questions. I'm going to allow people that have signed up for this particular work session to speak. That'll be after the mayor and council.
Okay, thank you. I guess I just want to, as we lead into this presentation, just to raise the question of what should be the role of the city of Bisbee in economic development? What should be our role in addressing needs in this community and growing our economy? What should be our role in stopping the outmigration of people that we've experienced here for several decades now? What should be our role then in bringing in services and firms that businesses that are lacking that we desire here? Certainly one option is for a city councilman to call up a CEO in Cincinnati and say, I'm this city councilman in this funky little town in Arizona, and we'd sure like to have a nursing home or a high-tech facility of some sort here. I think we're only going to get somewhere in terms of addressing needs if we indeed are credible with facts in terms of knowing what our opportunity is and being able to speak well in convincing a potential investor in the opportunity here. I'm very much pleased with the work that has been done and will be presented here today. Certainly, I think you can read in the Sierra Vista Herald that the city of Sierra Vista just recently hired a full-time economic development director. It's an indication of what other communities are doing in terms of that question of what should be the role of the city of Bisbee in economic development. I think we have kind of a unique economic development model that reflects our very limited resources in which we identified a very specific opportunity, which we think is senior care housing in this community. We've gone out and identified an individual who is well recognized as an expert in this area, who's well connected with the players in this area, the investors in this area, to advise us. I think it's kind of a unique approach in terms of preparing us then to really go out and market our community effectively to these prospects rather than a cold call to a firm. Also, I want to acknowledge this has been done cooperatively between Copper Queen Community Hospital and the city of Bisbee, and I really want to applaud that cooperative effort. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Poses, would you like to present the study and also maybe and take some comments from or questions from the council and or the IBISB committee?
Absolutely. Thank you very much, everyone, for being here. Thank you, Mayor and Council, for having me and for having me complete this project for you, as well as the Copper Queen Community Hospital for their participation. Obviously, without them, it wouldn't have been possible. As way of background, some of you may or may not know, I was originally approached by the IBISB committee to discuss the potential of bringing a senior care facility center down here. And to that effect, I offered myself as a consultant. I do run a consulting practice and have BP Diversified for about 10 years to help you guys identify and look at the market as a whole and find the key drivers and decide and determine whether or not a project like that would be feasible here in the market. With that, I'd like to just kind of dive right into what I've found. So the first thing that's really important to do is to define what the market is. Where is the BISB region or the primary market area is what we call it in the report. And the primary market area in this case is about an 1,825 square, not about, it is an 1,825 square mile polygon that sits in the southeast corner of Cochise County. The largest metropolitan area in that PMA is the Douglas area, followed by BISB, and it did exclude Sierra Vista. There were a number of reasons why Sierra Vista was excluded, just to mention a few of them. First of all, it was definitely a major concern on whether or not the primary market area was willing to concede the population, the senior care population, to go to Sierra Vista and ready to go ahead and acknowledge that they're going to move on to that market versus staying here in this market. Some of the other reasons are that it is a very different market. It has a lot of different drivers, namely because of the base. And as such, comparing it to the rest of the region really isn't a fair comparison because they have a tremendous amount of services and other things going for them that the rest of the PMA doesn't have. The next thing that we looked at, or that's important to look at, are all the different types of facilities that are available across the spectrum in senior care facilities. And to that end, there are a number of different facility types, and there's also, besides each individual type, there are blendings and mergers of different types for each individual operator and model. It generally starts senior care with active adults. This is generally a 55-plus population with very limited or unaffiliated healthcare services, but usually close by, and it's for adults that can still really care for themselves. Moving up the spectrum, you kind of get into an independent living facility. Independent living, again, you're still going to have that kind of 55-plus group. It is going to have some affiliation with healthcare services, whether those are provided on-site or off-site. It will have some kind of direct affiliation. And this is generally for adults who can really still care for themselves but may need, you know, other assistance with it, either health or lifestyle. And then again, continuing to move up, we get into the assisted living facilities. Now, these assisted living facilities are a residential solution that has fully integrated healthcare services as well as other services such as food and things like that. Again, continuing to move up, we get into nursing and memory care as well as specialty care, things like Alzheimer and dementia care. These are very, very medically intensive, usually with a 24-hour supervision, and usually there's medical staff on site. Not always, but usually. And certainly there's some medical staff that's equipped to handle whatever may come up with that kind of population. All the way through, obviously, into hospice care would be the end of this spectrum. Which is really for the end of life cycle. Generally, hospice days are less than 14 days, so that's really for the very end. And of course, again, like I said, you can have any mixture of these different services, and when you have all of them, it would be called a continuum of care. Now, I do, my family and myself have some background in the continuum of care business. I was an owner and an investor in the Fountains Continuum of Care, which was about 22 facilities across the country. We had a little over 5,000 residents. Our average size was about 250 to 350 units per facility type. So that's where I've gotten my background in this specific case. And we did exit that business back in 2006. We sold it to Sunrise Senior Living, a publicly traded company, just as way of background. And also, while I'm at it, I do want to make the distinction again that You know, I've really been hired as a consultant to come in and help evaluate the market. I am not in any way looking to come here as a developer to develop one of these types of facilities in the market. My role here is strictly as a consultant, not as a developer. So I want to be very clear on which hat I've got on, since I do wear several ones in other lives. One of the next things that we needed to look at was obviously all of the different demographic data in the primary market area that drives the decision-making behind these types of facilities. And after evaluating all of those, I was able to pull all of the statistics on the demographics and pool them to build a demand assessment. And the report, by the way, is available on the Copper Queen website as well as the city's website, and was attached, I believe, to the agenda items tonight. So if anyone hasn't had a chance to review it, by all means, please take the time to read it. It's about 30 pages, so there's a lot of information to absorb. And obviously tonight I'm not going to be able to cover all of it, but I wanted to run through the very important parts. So that being said, the demand assessment is one of those very important parts, because that's where we're finding out whether or not there really is a demand for a facility, and if so, what size could this facility possibly accommodate? To do that, we wanted to look at the target demographics for each of the facility types, but we really focused in on the facility type, on the qualifications for assisted living. The reason for that was, again, there are a number of different models out there that you can look at, but the assisted living is certainly an underserved area in the primary market area, as well as one of the easiest points of entry for an operator. These operators tend to, or have the ability to, come in and open one segment with the plans or hopes, if the market is receptive, to expanding into other products and services. And that can work in both directions. They might come in and start with assisted living and then introduce a hospice home, or they might come in and start with assisted living and then decide they want to do an active adult community attached with it as well. So there's a number of possibilities. And any developer or operator of these types of facilities is going to have their own model, not only operating model, but they're also going to have their own demand assessment model. So that being the case, I wanted to go with the most conservative of them. And that being said, let me dig right into what we found. First of all, in the assisted living facilities, we find that over 95% of the population is 75 years and older. So the first thing we want to look at is, okay, how many people in the primary market area are of that age? And we found that there were 2,347 people that are 75 years or older. Then we wanted to look at the income qualifications. Now, there are a number of different ways to evaluate this. And I get into detail how I evaluated it in the report. For the sake of time this evening, I'll say that the average income qualification turned out to be an income of $37,800 annually. Now, in the primary market area, 42.5% of those 75 years and older are in that income category or above it. So, out of the 2,347 population over 75, there are 997 that are qualified income-wise to be able to afford a facility of this type. The next thing that we want to look at is most people don't move into an assisted living facility with another person. They usually move in by themselves. It's usually a single person. So then we want to look at, okay, how many income-qualified 75-year-old singles do we have in the primary market area? And that left us with 273 income-qualified single 75-year-olds. So 27% of the income-qualified, age-qualified population was also single. That gave us the 273, of which roughly 11.8% are living with disabilities currently. Now, those that are single, over 75, can't afford it, and are also disabled are obviously very, very strong candidates to enter into a facility like this. And so with that, we are left with 32 income-qualified, single, disabled 75-year-olds living in the primary market area. Now, obviously, not everyone living in an assisted living facility is single. There are certainly a number of couples that wind up living in facilities or more than one-person households. And as a national average, roughly 12% of occupants are married or cohabitating in some way. So that being said, we're going to need to add back in another 12% for those non-single people that are living there, roughly two couples. So we get a total current market demand of income-qualified, single 75-year-old seniors with an adjustment for couples of 36 units or 36 beds that are currently there's currently demand for in the primary market area. So with that, it was very clear to me that there's obviously a very good market here. And if you can assume even that one facility is not obviously going to capture all of the market, that maybe it might only capture 50% of the market, there's certainly going to be room for a facility that's going to be 10 to 20 beds. And that the market drivers behind that are certainly there to support it. The next thing that was important to look at is what are the different locations that may be available to put a location like this. And with that, and first also, again, let me qualify that the things that I've outlined, the properties I've outlined in the report are only meant for example purposes. Any property, whether publicly owned or privately owned, and the availability of any such property is bound to change on a day-to-day basis. Any property owner has their rights as a property owner, as well does the city or the school board. And as such, these are only for suggestion to look at the overall availability of what's in the market. I really want to make sure that no one believes that there's any recommendation here for any given property or any given site. That is not the case. The point was to lay out all the different possibilities that exist in the market. And luckily, there are a number of great facilities that could either be converted and a number of different parcels of land that's available that could very easily be developed into a facility type. And I outline a few different things, a few of those different types of properties, one of which is city-owned, one of which is owned by the school board, and a number of others which are privately owned. Ultimately, at the end of the day, whoever the developer or operator is of the facility is going to have to come in and make that assessment on their own. And they're going to determine, based on their own unique model of operating their business, what kind of, you know, property or facility they need to best serve their clients. The next thing that I also went through in the report is the ability or possibility to do partnerships. And public-private partnerships specifically. And again, I want to be really clear, this is just for information purposes. Public-private partnerships require an agreement of two parties, one being the public and one being the private. And so any partnership that may or may not be a possibility is going to need to be negotiated directly between the developer and the operator and or the entity, whether it's the city, whether it's the school board, or any other entity for that matter that's looking for a public-private partnership. They're going to need to be agreements on both sides, and certainly no developer expects that a city is going to do a public-private partnership that's not in their best interest, both for their social reasons and their economic reasons. The best private-public partnerships and the only public-private partnerships I've been involved in personally are ones where the city or whatever municipality or other public jurisdiction is going to earn a return on their investment for whatever they're doing. So that being said, there are a number of different public-private partnerships that are available and structures that could be used to facilitate it. But again, it's so dependent on the developer or an operator and their individual model that going into any kind of specific scenario would really be so speculative that it's not worth your time. But it is important to note that it is a possibility, that the city does have some things in their tool bag, and the developers may or may not come in and ask for those things. And that's going to be, you know, up for discussion when the developer comes in. That's, you know, the overall... the best I can summarize 30 pages in about 10 minutes there. That's the overall summary of what's contained in this report. I would like to just say that on a second note, anyone who's going to come in here and do a development is obviously going to need to do a development that works with the culture of the town and works with the citizens of the town, because ultimately those are going to be their customers. And they're not. No developer is going to come in and try and change anything so drastically as far as your way of life or the character of this town goes, because ultimately they're not going to be able to attract the clients that they need to support their business. I guess at this point, if you want to open it up for questions, I'd love to...
Yeah, I'll start. My primary concerns or my responsibility involve watching over city assets such as the 10-plus acres behind Safeway.
Sure.
That's on your Google map as a potential site.
Sure.
And so I have serious concerns about that. I think we need to let the audience know, last night at the hospital board, you had a slideshow of sorts. And so I don't think the audience knows what the primary market is. So I'll try to describe it, and if I make a mistake, let me know.
Sure.
It's a rectangular area that essentially runs out to about where the San Pedro River is, running west, and then about 10 miles north, and it runs all the way over to the border of the state of New Mexico. Is that a good description?
Yeah.
And the important part of that, why I bring that up, is the city of Sierra Vista is left out of that primary market area.
Correct.
And I'm not really sure why that is. Why is Sierra Vista left out?
So I think I addressed that earlier. There were a couple of reasons for that.
Okay.
Again, first of all, I don't think that this community, and at the time when we initiated the project, were willing to concede that this type of a facility should be located in an area like Sierra Vista, opposed to in the primary market area. The point of this was really about trying to keep it here in Bisbee or the surrounding area and not go to Sierra Vista. The other reasons were the demographics of Sierra Vista are so skewed because of their base that it's not a fair representation of the rest of the 1,800-mile polygon that is the primary market area.
I don't want to hold all the questions. Any member of the council or the IBISB committee have questions? I have a lot of questions,
sure.
As you well know, as I asked them last night.
Absolutely.
Right? Council Member Dowdy.
You have that the population demand indicators currently 5,750 residents are age 65 and over. Where did this figure come from? How did you arrive at it?
So all of the population figures are all pulled from the U.S. Census data, and I use a service that goes ahead and compiles that for me. It's called ESRI, E-S-R-I. And on the back of the report, there is information for both the U.S. Census Bureau and ESRI as far as the accuracy of all those data.
Okay. I was just wondering, because at the Economic Forum Outlook, Bisbee population is only 5,424, so I couldn't figure out how you got this figure.
and again, with Douglas being a bigger area and the rest of the outlying areas, mm-hmm. that's where you're seeing the population increase, because that's obviously only representing that 65 and older segment.
Okay. Understood.
Another question that I have is dealing with public-private partnerships. So if a company comes down and buys some private land mm-hmm. and does whatever they're going to do on that private land, they don't really need a public-private partnership, correct?
No.
Okay. So the logic then would deduce that for a public-private partnership with the city of Bisbee, that involves some city assets, primarily that 10 acres out behind Safeway. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
Okay.
So there are some other tools and other things that you could do to help a developer if they were to request it. Now, they may very well, if a private developer came down and found private land, they very well may not ask for anything. That is, most development happens without public-private partnerships. That being said, you do have some things as a city that you charge for that you could use to help induce a developer in a private land. So things like permit fees, things like property tax abatements, things like I believe the sewer is still a city-owned utility. Sewer connection fees, things like that would still be in your toolbox if you felt that for some reason investing those dollars were going to earn you a return on investment.
Okay. So the city of Bisbee and the hospital, this is in the feasibility study, will not be involved in the development or the operation of this project if it ever comes to pass.
Sure.
Is that correct?
That's my understanding as it sits so far. If the city or the hospital at any given time should decide that they have an interest in developing or operating the facility, they certainly have every ability to do so.
Okay. And just to clear the record, and I know I asked this last night, but most of the people were not
sure
here last night. You are also a real estate developer, that's correct, right?
I am.
Yeah. Any other questions from the council? Council Member Hanson.
I just had a question about the demand that you came up with and the number of beds.
Sure.
Can we assume that is a very conservative?
Extremely conservative.
Okay. And what would be a middle of the road?
That's
more out of curiosity than anything else.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting, you know. I would think that, again, it depends on whether, you know, what drivers the developer or operator individually is going to use. It's a tough one. Again, you know, for me, I'm used to looking when I've done senior care facility center development myself, I'm looking at facility sizes and scopes that are so much larger than anything that might, you know, come to a town like this, that, you know, making a guess would be as good as yours.
The reason I ask is because initially on the initial, it wasn't an analysis, the proposal or whatever, that was done by Copper Queen, for the demand, it was 280 beds that was cited.
Okay.
So, and this being a lot lower than that, I just didn't know if you had any other figures, you know, like a middle of the road.
I'm not sure.
I do like a conservative figure.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what numbers they used to arrive at that. If I were to guess, I would assume... and actually, I'm not going to make an assumption on how they came to that number. I would say that another way of looking at it besides this is if you wanted to look at the 75-year up segment as a whole, of what kind of percentage of market capture, just as a whole, you might get of that market. And again, with the 75-plus population, we're talking about... with the 65-plus population, we know that there's 5,700 residents. So if you assumed maybe half a percentage of market capture, you'd get pretty close to that 280 beds.
Okay. So that's assuming everyone over 65, and it's not really focused on just one area of care.
Correct, and that would be, again, a very – I mean, you're talking about capturing half of 1% of that market. So that would still, to me, be relatively conservative, but another way to look at it.
Okay. Thank you. It just seemed like it was a small number, and I know that there was a larger number earlier, and it makes sense if you're focusing on just one area.
Sure.
So, and then expanding from there. Thank you.
You indicated that you interviewed people in the area. I hate to be redundant because I asked this last night, but there's only four people in
Absolutely.
This room that was there last night. So how many people did you interview, and did you also talk to some government leaders, and who might those be?
I spoke with about 15 to 20 different people, and obviously, as far as the governmental leadership, you know, I was hired by your predecessor. I've obviously been interacting with Mr. Johnson, your city manager, very frequently, and as well as the IBISB committee. I've worked with a number of them, as well as a number of your councilmen.
Since you brought that up, did the mayor and council have any involvement in the selection of BP Diversified? My understanding, and I could be wrong, that was done by the hospital and or by the IBISB committee. Is that correct?
The hospital is the contractor.
Okay. And so the city of Bisbee that contributed half of the $16,000 had essentially no say in the selection, which was a competitive bidding process,
yes,
I understand.
It was.
And so kind of curious who those other bidders might be.
The other bidder was, there was one other bidder. It was a major firm out of California, and their key credential was they were the advisors to the Arizona Teachers Pension Retirement Fund, and they had also done work in this area. The two proposals we had, the proposal from BP Diversified and the California firm, were almost identical. BP Diversified added two things. One, their price was $5,000 less than the California firm. And secondly, as part of their proposal was the introduction to the city of Bisbee of several developers who developed this type of property and who were well known to the principal of BP Diversified. So, and the California firm could not give us that kind of assurance. There are only several firms that were really known in this area.
Okay, thank you. Just so the public knows, this is the report. It's 30 pages, and it costs $16,000 is what this costs. $8,000 from the city of Bisbee, $8,000 from the hospital. Three of these are cover pages, so really we only have like 27 pages. Two of those pages are satellite images, so now we're down to 25 pages. I assume you can get that satellite image off the computer pretty quickly. And then there's some other satellite images off there. So we're dealing with maybe about 22 pages for $16,000. The public needs to know that, and I need to tell them that.
And I'd also like to point out that the ability to gather this data is extremely expensive. My subscription to ESRI, which is where all the data comes from, is $8,000 alone. and for this project. So there are a lot of other fees that go into it. The other thing I'd like to point out is that I do not use your standard Times New Roman font, 12, 1.5 spacing. I made this to fit in 30 pages. If I use your standard spacing, it'd probably be about 80 pages, and I didn't want to scare people off of reading it.
Let me ask another question, because we're starting getting into the dealings with the feasibility study. Do you have an LLC called Client Relations Specialists? In partnership with Mr. Jason Haas?
You know, I'm not sure.
Well, I saw it on the website. And do you have another partner in this room tonight? Could you tell me who that is? And the client relations specialist?
I don't know.
Is it SK Stern Associates?
I know for certainty that I do not own anything of client relations specialist.
Your name's on it.
I'm 100% certain that I do not own any of it.
Okay. Any other questions from the council?
I have several questions and comments. If we're looking at a 10 to 20 bed facility, what acreage would be required for such a facility?
You know, there's a number of different possibilities. and again, it depends on what the developer or operator's individual model cares for as their service delivery. I would say that it could fit on something as small as potentially a half of an acre, and it could go to something as large as probably 5 to 10 acres, depending on the land use.
Okay. There was an article in the Sierra Vista Herald of December 15th that a feasibility study was commissioned to look at the vacated hospital at Sierra Vista as a possible assisted living VA center. The result of that study was that it's not feasible. How would you respond to that?
A couple things. First of all, again, Sierra Vista was excluded from our study, so that's the first thing. Secondly, I have tried to, unfortunately, I can't track down a copy of the actual report. The best I've done is the article myself, so I have no way of verifying the accuracy of the report. Also, like you said, it was a veterans, specifically for veterans. So that being the case, it's a very different market segment than looking at the whole population as a whole.
Also, it's a very large facility.
Yes. The facility that they currently own that they were talking about converting is a very large facility.
Where do we go from here?
So from here, the next step is really to use this as the marketing tool to attract the developer and the operator of the facility to the area. That's really the next step, and I understand that both the city and the hospital have taken it upon themselves to make this very publicly available, as well as my understanding the hospital is committed to doing a real press release for it, and that's really the next steps.
And you have identified also some major players in the senior care industry as prospects for it.
Yes, and on that note, again, I'll be making those introductions as a individual. That is not a part of the scope of the work per se. But yes, I will be making introductions to several operators that I think are very good candidates to possibly come down here.
Okay.
Also, I just want to say on that note, with those introductions, it's very important for me to let you guys know that I will have no participation in any economic benefit from those introductions in any way, shape, or form.
Just to relate this need to individuals, it's interesting that in the last month, had an immediate neighbor who moved into an assisted living facility in Colorado. As I visited with her son and daughter as they cleared out the house, the comment was, I really wish that you had been a little earlier on this assisted living. We'd much rather that mother be here than in Colorado. Likewise, I have another neighbor who was very fit and able and self-sufficient. But certainly this last summer had some physical ailments that kind of scared him. He's decided that he needs a little bit more care if this reoccurs. He has his house up on the market now and has sold its contents, is waiting for it to sell. Again, he's telling me, oh, I wish this facility was here. I have another case of a woman who basically has indicated that, you know, I'm the oldest daughter. I'm going to be the prime caretaker for my mother who lives in California. She's reaching that age where something's going to need to be done. It's either me moving and leaving Bisbee to be with her, or if this facility is here, she could be moved here so I could care for her here. I wish it was here. Three personal examples in terms of the need in this community, and these are my immediate neighbors in terms of the aging community that we are in and the need for such a facility. Again, I'm amazed. You made comment about this is only a 24-page report. Gosh, I am amazed with the amount of information that is contained in that report and no whitewash. I mean, it certainly indicates the limitations as well as the strengths of this community. It certainly puts us, in my opinion, the city in a position where we can actually sit down and talk facts with the prospect. Not just that we would like this, we need it, but this really is what that opportunity is. I would like to question how much the city of Sierra Vista is paying for their new economic development director and how that compares with what has been paid here for a very targeted approach to economic development.
And I'll point out that a number of my other clients use me for exactly that reason. A lot of the consulting work that I do is for larger firms that don't want to have an in-house analytics person, and the only way to get this kind of quality of work is either through consulting or having in-house, and obviously consulting is significantly less expensive.
In reply to Councilmember Dunn, obviously the feasibility study is done and paid for, but 24 pages divided by 16,000, I don't know what that comes to, about $700 a page, is that what that averages out to in that ballpark? I have a concern about that, but it's already over and done with. It's a serious question. My responsibility and concern right now is the 10.5 acres or so behind Safeway. And so as I brought up last night, right across the road, Collins Road, is another parcel of land, privately owned, about 15.9 acres, and that wasn't encircled in black, like all those other various properties out in that region. Sierra Cobre, the middle school, Tierra de la Flores, they were all outlined, but right next, adjacent to your campus area that you're talking about, that area was left out. I wasn't sure why that was.
Again, the availability of the real estate fluctuates so much that if I were to try and include every property, first of all, it'd be impossible because, again, it changes every single day. And secondly, I did consult with three local real estate agents or brokers. I'm not sure which they are. But I tried to put in as much of what they showed, what they saw as being available at the time that was representative of the area. But again, any developer that's going to come to town is going to look at this as a starting point, and they're going to go and do their own search, and if there's other lands that are available, have become available, will become available, those will be something that they can certainly look at.
Well, how I know that is because there's a big sign on the Naco Highway that says for sale and can be divided. I was just curious why that was left out. It is advertised for sale.
It didn't show up. Unfortunately, you know, on the market is a very interesting term today in real estate, and whether something is on the MLS, whether something is on a LoopNet or a CoStar, which are some of the larger commercial advertising sites, or whether someone just has a sign on their property, it all changes very regularly, and at that time, that specific property did not show on any of the digital ones, and therefore I didn't capture that whatever specific site that you're referring to.
Well, let me say it. I'm not against an assisted care facility. I would support that. But my concern, once again, as I said at the opening of this session, is those 10-plus acres behind Safeway. I'm very concerned about that because I think in the future that could possibly be a park,
and
or
I'd just
part
like
of it
to
could
remind
be a community garden, et cetera, et cetera. So that is my primary concern, but I'm not against.
And as the mayor and council, you control that property, and nothing about this report or otherwise changes that. So, it's your property.
I know we had a private talk last night, and you indicated that, and I was pleased to hear that as well. So I'm hard hitting, but that's my job.
Sure. No, absolutely.
Some questions from the IBSB committee.
On a positive note, I haven't heard anybody say anything about this. If we did in fact bring a company here to develop this, it would mean probably 30 jobs at least for a 10 to 20 bed facility. It would mean property tax collection. It would mean in shopping in Bisbee. I mean, it's not just about a senior living community, you know. I think that it's more important to look at the positive benefits at this point and then see what happens rather than worry about something that's one in a million. So
I appreciate that, and certainly there are a number of positive influences besides the care that come out of a development like this, including possibly permit fees, taxes, Obviously, employment is huge. All of those types of things that can come with growth like this.
I'll try not to be so hard-hitting. But my next question is, what would be the next step in this process? Now, you have a client list of developers, including Diamond Ventures.
No.
Is that incorrect?
That's incorrect.
Okay.
And your own clients.
One of my clients is Diamond Ventures,
okay.
But they're not at all involved in this project.
Okay. So what is the next step in this process? You're kind of finished and out of the picture. Is that where we're at with you?
On official capacity, yes. That being said, there are some developers and operators of senior care facility types, specifically ones that I think might work in this community, that I will be introducing to both the IBISB committee as well as the city's office to them to have those conversations directly.
Okay, how quickly would that process take place, would you think?
Those introductions will be made before the end of next week.
Oh, very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I guess this is a good groundwork that we're laying tonight of what we can expect, and I'm not sure what kind of questions that they will have or what they will want or what they would expect, but you would be advising them?
No. Again, I'm making an introduction,
okay.
and that's it. I will have no capacity on either side, be it your side or their side, and no other benefits. I'm a consultant. I've been paid, or hopefully we'll finish getting paid out on the rest of this, and that's the extent of any benefit that I have out of this project.
I understand. Is there any more comments from the or questions from the council
yes.
or the IBISB committee? Council Member Dowdy.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why would people want to move to Bisbee in the assisted living when we really don't have anything to speak of? We have no shopping to speak of. We have a store closed and one closing in the San Jose area. We don't have any entertainment for these people. If it's assisted living in Sierra Vista, I know they take buses to take the people to shopping or wherever they need to go. We don't have any movies or plays that elderly people can get to. We have some things going on at Central School, but that means that they would have to go up some stairs. And if they're on crutches or wheelchair or walkers or anything, they can't get upstairs.
You know, again, depending on the type of facility that were to come in, obviously if we're talking about a more assisted living facility, we're not talking necessarily about residents that are going out shopping all the time. That being said, I also think you're selling your community short a little bit. As someone who's coming from Tucson, Bisbee has a lot to offer. You have a really tremendous community here, and you have a character and a charm that I have not found anywhere else in Arizona. And actually, earlier in conversations, I was talking about this exact thing. I can't imagine why someone would move to a Marana or why someone would move to a Vail. I can very easily understand why someone would move to Bisbee. So I wouldn't sell yourself so short.
I was just thinking about the facilities because I know I have some friends in assisted living in Sierra Vista, and the bus takes them.
And certainly busing is a possibility
by,
as well.
Yeah, provided by the assisted living.
Sure.
They also have housekeeping, and they have meals delivered to them. Will we have anything like that, or do you know?
Again, that would be up to the developer or operator, but that being said, obviously there's the ability for them to provide those food services and the ability to provide them with a van to take them to mm-hmm. different services, and maybe some of those services aren't here locally, but they could still take a van to Sierra Vista or to Tucson for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Any other council member Dunn?
Yes, I just like to speak on the opposite side of comments made here, and that is that certainly Bisbee has talked about this promotion of Bisbee as a retirement area, an area to move to in the retirement years. And certainly Mr. Stan here makes reference to appealing to the Woodstock generation. And I think that's kind of an interesting thought in terms of what our population appeal might be. What I have a concern is if we're promoting Bisbee as a place for retirement, currently that we have a condition on that retirement, and that is once you reach the age of 75 or 80, you have to leave. So you only have 10 or 15 years to live here in Bisbee, because at the end of that time, you have to go somewhere else if you need any type of care. This now allows us to truly be a retirement area for the Woodstock generation. I like that phrase, because it allows me, when I need it, to walk across the street, and I'm closer to that than some other people here on up here, that I can walk across the street and remain in Bisbee. And this is certainly the three cases that I shared with you earlier. It's precisely what the same individuals were saying. I talked with several clergy here just recently, and they said the biggest concern our church is this elderly church. What are we going to be doing for assisted living? The single biggest concern of my congregation is, where am I spending my next few years?
And a facility of that some type might be able to solve a lot of those issues.
I like Bisbee, and I want to be here as long as I can be.
Any other questions or comments from the council or the iBisbee committee? We have a couple of people that would like to speak tonight. Marie Miner.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Poses.
Hello. Marie Miner. I live in Briggs in Bisbee. And my questions are addressed mostly to the gentleman who just spoke, unfortunately. So he's there, I'm here. But I know that oftentimes the responsibility is not to be able to answer our questions. We just raise them. That's the way this functions, government functions this way. One of my concerns is that we're talking about 10 to 20 beds. I know that there's a project going on, and I don't know how far along it is, in Ramsey, in which they have a number of beds. And of them, there are a section of it designated for low income. And so I'd like to know, what happens to people like me who worked all my life, almost all my life, and could not afford? I don't have that income level of $37,800. Uh-oh. So what happens to people like me? And I'm single. My cats don't support me. Another question is, how many jobs will be gained? Kathy kind of referred to it as far as construction. I'd like that kind of truly spelled out. How many would be involved in the construction? And then later, how many would be involved in the staffing? That includes administration and maintenance. What kind of jobs are we talking down the road? I mean, the city's invested $8,000 in this with the idea of having some money come back in terms of jobs and income to the community. So I'd like to hear a little more specifics. And thirdly, will the iBisbee committee or the city be recommending any other developers? I mean, it's very nice of him to refer people, but it would be very nice also if we did our homework too and came up with some other developers. Let's not just leave it all to him. Mm-hmm. And last, I'd like to make a recommendation. And the owner of the San Jose Lodge did not put me up to this, okay? I want to make that very straight. San Jose Lodge has a restaurant which complies with the current health department regulations. As a former inspector, I've even inspected it. Secondly, it has an administration building that could be converted into a business administration building for this facility. It has a bar that could be converted to a rec center. Thirdly, it has a pool. And it's easier to, instead of creating a pool, to make a pool be usable for physical therapy, to be able to adapt that pool. It may be too expensive, I'm not sure. And all of them face, all the residents faces around the pool. And it just seems like a really good setting if we could, like, twist the arm of the owner and get the price that we want. That might be the hardest part, is getting the price that we could afford. But just as one possibility. Whereas if you took a place like the Bisbee Middle School, which is such a vacant building, you'd have to make all those rooms be able to comply. From a classroom to make it into a living space would be a lot more expensive. It does not have a health department kitchen, because all they did was warming and cooling of the foods that were produced at Bisbee High School that has a commercial kitchen. So that has to be thought about. It takes a lot of money to get a health department compliant facility. As an inspector, I was shocked. You know, a two-door refrigerator unit that has glass in it, when that comes up to being $10,000 just for that unit, oh, my God, you can understand how much is put into a restaurant to make it to comply. Thank you.
Next we have Mr. Peter Van Gunlock.
Mr. Mayor, I believe Mr. Stern had a question earlier.
I'm sorry.
Sir, a couple things.
Excuse me, Peter.
My colleague, a member of the committee, who has a question he wanted to ask of Ben.
My apologies. I didn't see you.
Okay. You just moved right on to the next section.
That's why we've kind of motioned.
Would you want to put the microphone a little closer to him? There we go. I guess that's as close as it gets.
I don't want to speak for everyone on council, but from a couple of comments made here, I sense that a question is in order. Where is this council as far as promoting economic growth in the region? And assuming that you as a council have interest in promoting economic growth in the region, my question to Ben, our consultant, would be, what kind of tools do you recommend that we have in our tool bag as incentives to attract developers to do this project? You have identified that the viability of having this project developed in the area. Now, the next step is what do you think our tools should be to attract developers? Even if they have private property to develop, is it still the interest of this council to move forward and attract developers to develop this project? And you know, if I was a developer and hear comments made, and I don't want to generalize, but a few of the comments I heard, I'd be walking out the door. It does not lend itself to openness for economic growth. And I wonder from this meeting whether we're wasting our time here in looking at economic development as an IBISB committee. I speak as an IBISB committee member. Are we wasting our time? This is not the only project we're going to come to council with recommendation to develop. Should we continue looking at other projects? The sentiment of anti-growth is there, and any developer is going to walk away. Is going to walk out of this room. How can you attract, even if you have a toolbox, just the talk of anti-growth is going to drive people away. That's my comment.
Thank you. Any other comments from the IBISB committee?
Just one, Mr. Mayor. With relation to the acreage of land that you talked about, I happen to be in your corner. That land is land that we hold here in the city. If someone comes to us and says they're going to put 300 jobs in that land, then I suggest that we would all huddle and think about it. But at this point, that land is sacrosanct to the city, is held by the city, and is not part of the toolkit that we're talking about for a senior citizen development that may bring 20 to 30 jobs to our community. We would only use that land, or I would only advise using that land, if it was really something that was outstanding, and the council agreed that it was outstanding, and the council then voted to sell that land, not give it away, sell that land to a developer. So I think you and I are on the same page when it comes to that land.
Thank you. Any other comments from the council or the IBISB committee? We'll go to Mr. Peter von Gundlach now.
I'm Peter von Gundlach, greeting the council and the mayor and the citizens here. I live at 327 McLaren Avenue in Warren. Been living here for over 23 years. I reviewed the voluminous work that Mr. Posen created, the survey and the entire study that was done, and I have some questions regarding it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to mention specific items in the survey that concerned me. So on page 3, I have a question on paragraph number 1, which was, why does the study repeatedly exclude neighboring Sierra Vista in the PMA, which is Cochise County's economic engine, whose own independent VA study revealed a current surplus of 109 beds, that is for assisted living, and with a projected surplus of 149 beds by 2019. So it's not a question of not having the beds available and not having the facilities available. It's just a question of moving about 8 miles from that profile of the PMA, where you would actually now become in Sierra Vista. So we're really neighbors. I mean, it's not a question of having to travel that far from the PMA area to actually encounter Sierra Vista, because we're almost adjoining it from that point on. So again, we're talking about 109 beds that are available and a projected 149 beds by 2019. Then the second part of page 3 is the economic demand indicators suggest that there would be a minimal impact on patients who would be paying between $3,000 and $4,000 a month per bed or accommodation, because this is approximately what I would imagine after having talked to people around here that a first-class facility would require in order to maintain their cover their expenses. With the current housing market's depressed prices, most of the patients would deplete their home's equity in less than 3 years before becoming wards of the state, assuming Medicaid was still viable. Access has already been reducing payouts to providers due to the provisions of the Affordable Care Act that is reducing the availability of professional caregivers who now can't economically function anymore. Item 3 of page 3 deals with competitive indicators. A, while the market is not overly saturated, that's in quotes, Sierra Vista was given as an example. B of number 3, in quotes, currently planned development in Sierra Vista is a positive indicator that demand is outpacing supply. Again, there's a contradiction between those two statements. And in view of Sierra Vista's study indicating a 30% increase in available beds by 2019, I don't quite understand the logic behind those two statements, because they seem to contradict each other. On C of that same paragraph 3, it says, and I believe this is deceptively misleading, by characterizing available beds in PMA as being 5 to 10 bedroom operations, that's in quotes, when further on, if you look at the charts and at the statistics, you reveal that in Douglas, Arizona, Solana has 64 beds and Cypress has 36 beds among the other groupings of 5 and 10 bedroom facilities. So these were completely ignored when that first statement was made. So then you report that Sierra Vista, not in the PMA, has a total of 183 beds, while the Sierra Vista Herald article reports a total of 370 beds. So there seems to be a discrepancy there as well in terms of what the available number of beds are. And what I'm concerned about is the overhang of existing beds, particularly in a situation where things are somewhat uncertain, particularly now with the our economy in particular is vulnerable to the value of the peso, which devalued from 12 to the dollar to 15 to the dollar just yesterday. And so we're dealing now with reduced cash flow as a result of our dependence on taxes coming from Mexican consumers that come across the line and purchase the few things that we do have available here. And so we're also looking at a continual downturn in terms of possibilities for revenue coming in. So these were concerns that I saw right away from the and the first on page 3. And then on the conclusion of page 3, the first proposal suggested an overly ambitious 200-plus bed project, which Joan Hansen mentioned. And then I agree that scaling down to 10 or 20 beds would be more feasible. I believe that converting our existing housing stock into handicap-compliant single or double resident occupancy homes would provide compounded benefits to the community as a whole, because we have an overhang of empty homes right now that are selling at quite low prices because they can't seem to move. The opinion of the survey that conversion costs outweigh benefits accrued from newly designed facilities hasn't yet been substantiated. Your new proposed facilities could be offering expensive and maybe unnecessary services and procedures to justify loan servicing and operational costs. And this is natural in almost any situation when suddenly things get tight. Well, then we maybe have to uncover more needs amongst the patient population so we can justify our cash flow. I'm not saying this is the case, but this is often the case. The plan also seems to suggest that due to a scarcity of memory care professionals, memory care is a euphemism for people that have neurological or particularly Alzheimer's disease and so forth. The reports that I've read from Sierra Vista is that there's a shortage, a severe shortage, of skilled nursing, dementia, and Alzheimer's professionals. This, incidentally, was also mentioned in this report as well. So, again, the problem here is that if patients have these kind of challenges and they have to move, the likelihood of them moving to Sierra Vista would probably be even less, because Tucson is the only place that really has an abundance of these type of professionals. And the whole purpose of having a care facility here is that people would be able to maintain contacts with old friends and neighbors. Well, if they can't stay here because they're no longer capable of managing their affairs and they have to end up going to Tucson, that puts an unusual burden on their families and neighbors if they want to be visited. And the problem is that, we have limitations in terms of our resources for professional people. We don't have memory care professionals here yet. We probably won't have, but Sierra Vista has a few. And Tucson, of course, has the necessary resources to do that. So these were issues that concerned me at the time. And then in terms of the public-private partnership, I think that was already discussed pretty completely already. And again, when in terms of page 5, we're dealing with approach and methodology. And that is who, where, and what were the individuals you interviewed who helped you form your opinions. What do you mean by competitive landscape, and why would the competitive landscape prevent you from acquiring useful information? The competitive landscape was used as a reason why further investigation couldn't be accomplished. At least it was in the document. You mentioned qualitative and quantitative studies. What are the results, and what metrics and benchmarks were employed? How do you measure qualitative results? I mean, is there any sort of measuring scale for doing that? What was the source of your demographic studies? What criteria was employed to arrive at your conclusions? You state that a senior demographic profile is insufficient to determine demand for services. Then what is? I thought that information was to be part of your product. In other words, a service delivery package. So we would have specific information and specific data to be able to make plans. What I find right now is everything is sort of ephemeral and vague. We know a little more than before. The study was undertaken without the age range of 65 to 75 years qualifying one for senior services seems rather ambiguous without official validation. Why does this study contain such few specifics? Why aren't the data sources referenced with all of their pertinent data spelled out instead of hidden in cryptic acronyms like ESRI, REIS, CDC, ASDHS? Most of us don't know who these people are or these organizations are and don't have the time or the ability to look up all the pertinent data. So these references were basically just thrown out there without giving the specific information that these sources should normally be presented in this study. So all in all, I'm finishing it with my conclusions. I think that having a Bisbee-based senior independent living community is a good idea, particularly if it's affordable and permits local families contact with their loved ones. Communities seem to work much better for folks than institutional isolation. Micro senior living seems much healthier for an individual living alongside 6 or 7 neighbors where social relationships can be created and the cost of care is low. When I talk about low cost, I'm talking about $1,500 to $2,500 a month, not $3,000 to $4,000 a month. Another option would be the San Jose Lodge, which Marie already mentioned, with its 8 acres and 70-plus rooms that, if purchased for around $1 million, has the potential of being a hybrid senior home resort by converting 10 of the rooms into handicap-compliant SRO, or single resident occupancy or double resident occupancy units, separating the senior living part from the motel part with creative landscaping and blinds. As the demand increases, additional rooms can be converted while the existing motel rooms can continue as part of the revenue stream. The restaurant and the bar could serve both senior and motel guests needs. The motel could also accommodate the seniors' visitors. It has a pool that needs some modest renovations that can be incorporated into the hybrid senior resort plan. Turning the rooms into a condo co-op where each occupant owns their space can also be sold to the next in line. So these are issues that are important to look at because we do have other options besides starting from scratch with a new piece of land and so forth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Van Gunlock. Is there any other questions from Mr. Smith?
I have a statement here.
Certainly.
Thank you, Mayor. I wasn't aware that there was a sign-up sheet for this, or I would have. My name is David Smith. I live at 301 Cole. I was, in fact, the council liaison to this committee. So I know a little bit about what the mission was of the committee. And I think that many people, and I certainly value the information that Mr. Van Gudloff and Ms. Miner gave us, but I think that many of us are under the misunderstanding, misconception. This is not a city project. This is a project that the city went 50-50 on for a study to see if they could attract developers here to put this facility in. So when we talk about it would be better if we did infill and all of these things, those are the things to talk to the developer about, and they may be attracted to the developer, they may not. But those are not things for the city to make a decision on because it's not the city's decision to do that. This is a private, this is attempting to attract private enterprise here that provides jobs and a tax base to the city. That's all it is. A 10-acre parcel of land had been mentioned, and that was simply because the city owned it, and that was one out of many different things. It could be that a developer comes and they want to look at San Jose Lodge, or they want to look at the school. They may want to do many different things, but that's up to them to make those decisions. And it can't be up to the council, the mayor, or frankly, the IBISB committee or anybody else to make those decisions for them. So I just wanted to try to clear the air, Mayor, that some of these questions, although are not out of order, are certainly out of context. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from council or IBISB committee? Mr. Posez, my apologies if I seemed abrasive or truculent, but I asked questions that I think many people in the community would have wanted me to ask, and I think you understand.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously. This meeting is adjourned.
Adjourned.
Thank you.